Blog Talk Radio.
Cool. I think it gave us an extra 20 seconds.
Nice.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that 20 seconds is precious before we always sign off.
Absolutely. 100%.
Let's not waste it. Guys, listeners, if you were looking for a movie where Al Capone shits his pants and stabbed guys in the neck, boy, have I got the movie for you.
Spoilers.
Let's take a listen.
What's it? Go back to prison. I'm a fucking swamp animal. You know, this is what happens when people spend too much time in Florida. They turn into fucking hillbillies. That's what you're turning into. You know that, don't you? Fucking nutball.
Before Brett ruined it with his laugh.
I'm sorry. I knew you were going to pick that. I knew you'd pick that clip.
I mean, I think that was the scene in the movie where I was like, this is kind of cool. Like, I still had no idea where it was going. But that was for those of you who haven't seen it, it's a scene where Matt Dillon, I still don't know who Matt Dillon was. And I think that's part of the problem.
That's a huge problem. He disappears halfway through the movie and then comes back and appears to be dead.
Oh, that was cool. No. I think the writing was like kind of all over the place. Like tonally, it was like, I had no idea what to make of it. But I just want to say, I texted you last night, but I'm just going to come up with a little movie rule. If you're watching a mob movie and the title of the movie is the last name of the gangster and there's a hip hop producer doing the soundtrack, tread lightly. we're kind of like 0 for 2.
You think? I mean, here's the thing. I was gonna open this show a different way, which is to say that you don't get to pick movies anymore because you are really killing me with this stuff.
I've asked you to pick movies, and you're like, I don't know. You pick.
I did. I picked Carlito's Way, and you said, no, I want to see Capone.
Oh, because Capone came out, so it's time. It just came out, so it's timely. Capone.
Well, it's technically
out
a continuation of Untouchables, right? Like, this is all the stuff that happens after Untouchables. So you could see them as two, as combined. It's part of the Capone verse.
We're gonna talk about Tom Hardy's performance, but just a little bit. There, you know what? I usually use this time to like talk about the background of the movie, like give some history on the production, but there really isn't much except that Tom Hardy knew he was gonna make this right after Venom. So last week we talked about Robert De Niro's 1-2 punch with Untouchables and then Midnight Run. This is Tom Hardy's 1-2 punch of Venom and then Capone.
I mean, at least Venom's a hit. I mean, that's the only thing you can say about it. I mean, I thought Venom was a terrible movie, but it was a $1 billion terrible movie. I mean, this went straight to video. I mean, what Tom Hardy's thing with this sort of incoherent yelling is just like, what is it with him? It's a bizarre fetish. I don't get it. He is a phenomenal actor. I love him, but what the hell, man?
Can I read you, since we're on the subject, I guess, I want to read you, I was reading a review by Matt Zoller-Seitz of RogerEbert.com, his review, and I want your opinion on this. Tom Hardy might be the closest thing we have to a Marlon Brando right now. Not just in the sense that Hardy is a method actor who loves makeup and costumes, and sometimes masks, and has a theatrical, at times outright ham-boned streak, but also in that Hardy, like Brando, seems to operate according to his own internal logic, whether it matches what's around him or not. That's the first sentence.
That might be fair. I mean, he's definitely going on – God, how do you even put this? I mean, you know, he's obviously – I mean, he's a movie star, and he can have his pick of roles. At the same time, you know, he's not a traditional leading man, so he's not going to get – he's not going to do – you know, the kind of stuff that, what's his name, you know, Star-Lord is going to get. He's not Robert Downey Jr. Like, that's not who he is. He's not going to be Iron Man. You know, he isn't even Batman. He's Batman's nemesis.
Right. I mean, there's one thing I do love about Tom Hardy is it's almost like no two of his performances are the same, which is great for, I think, really brave of an actor. Like, he's still a movie star, and he's picking movies like Capone. Now, you gave it, like, a little shade for saying that it came out on direct-to-video, but that's not its fault. It was supposed to have a theatrical release, but if any of you guys are paying attention, we're in the middle of a pandemic. That's the podcast.
I don't know. This felt like something that might go straight to video anyway. This is a weird movie.
I wrote in my notes, there was a certain point, and I'm going to talk about it, but at my favorite part in the movie where I was like, I really hope that this becomes a midnight classic. I can see it going down that route as being like a midnight movie. Because it is.
I can't.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just, go ahead. It's all right. Go ahead.
Okay. So I just want to say, back up a little bit. So the movie was written and directed by Josh Trank, whose last writing credit was Fanforstic. So let's be honest, that anything's a step up from that.
Well, did you see that movie? Because I bet you didn't.
No, I didn't see it.
Of course you didn't, because you're not a maniac like me. I am a student of the superhero genre, so I made a point of seeing that movie. And that movie, if Josh Trank were a woman, he would never work again after Fantastic Four. That's how bad it is.
Wow, hot take.
Yeah, that was a
really
terrible – it was an awful film.
I think – but, you know, that movie, I know we shouldn't be talking about it, but, like, I heard that movie had studio interference and all sorts of problems, so – I feel like this is the type of movie you would make if you were pissed off at the studio, too. Like, fuck it, I'm just going to do what I want. I'm just going to do some bullshit. Like, look at what a great filmmaker I can be, sort of thing. But he didn't direct it. He didn't direct Fanforstic. He wrote it.
So he did direct it. His name might have come off it, but he directed it.
Oh, he did? I thought it was someone else.
I'm pretty sure he directed it. If I'm wrong, I take back what I said, but I don't think I am.
Anyway, my biggest problem with this movie is it shouldn't be called Capone. And I came up with some other alternative titles because it reminded me of a few of these. The Caponing. Capone Peaks or Twin Capeaks?
Twin Capeaks. There you go. That's we have a winner.
Twin Capeaks. Because Kyle MacLachlan's in this movie too, so...
But see, don't you think there's a better movie to be made about his story? Like, they hint at something with him that's never explained. And it's kind of like, well, maybe we could find out what's going on there. Like, that might be interesting, because Capone is not the most interesting character in this movie. It's a very one-note portrayal.
Yeah, I don't know what – you want to – let's talk about Tom Hardy's performance, because, like, it's going to be hard to, like – it's going to be hard to talk about any part of it unless, like, without bringing that up. So, I wrote, this is not your father's alphabet.
There are a lot of odd choices. Like, did you notice that when they were in the car driving to go fishing, he was dressed like a woman?
Yes, but that was to disguise him. I got that.
That's what it was supposed to be? That was a disguise?
Yeah, because he was going – so I thought the beginning title card was kind of – not brilliant. At first I was like, this sets up no stakes. Because, again, I thought I was getting into, like, a movie about Al Capone's final year. But the fact – so the movie's about that he – it's about his final year. But not really, because he's still alive at the end. So
I thought it was going to end with him dying. That's how they set it up.
There was a few parts where it's like, oh, he's going to die. And he doesn't. Or he's dead. And he doesn't. But the movie's about he has – he's dying of neurosyphilis, or he has neurosyphilis. I wonder if I didn't look it up. Is that like an outdated term for like Alzheimer's? Or I know they said it was dementia later in the movie, but I wonder if like neurosyphilis is like, does anyone contract neurosyphilis anymore?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think anyone dies of syphilis. I mean, it's a sexually transmitted disease and eventually it gets in your brain, but I think it's treatable now. Right?
It's probably like a consumption. You know, like one of those outdated diseases. The movie also does like a really bad job of like I really thought, like, if you don't know what year Al Capone died, you're going to be very confused. Because there was a part where it was, the title card says it's 1931, or he gets convicted
yes.
in 1931. And then he's watching The Wizard of Oz in another scene. And I'm like,
I wrote all that down. And they're talking about Bugs Bunny and all these other things. And I was kind of like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know, and so they said it. I mean, that's what I mean by, like, mistakes were made, let me put it that way, is it's like stuff like that shouldn't happen. Someone should step in and say, like, well, wait a minute, you really can't do that. You're telling people it's 1931 and then you time jump and you don't tell anyone. Like, that's just weird.
Right. That's what I was confused, and I was like, wait a minute, what? And I had to look up what year he died. He died in 47, I believe. Al Capone died in 47. So it all actually tracks. But you have to, like, look it up to figure that out. And that's not – I like a movie where you leave asking questions, but not questions that, like, could easily be answered by the movie. And this didn't do it. But this is really, like, so I just want to go back to Tom Hardy's performance. Is this good acting or bad acting?
It's really hard to say. He is a good actor. I mean, he is undisputably a good actor. I mean, he was terrific as Bane, among other things. I mean, he's very, very talented. So I don't know that I would consider this to be one of his finer performances. I thought it was very one note. Now, he did actually shit the bed, which, because he's a method actor, so we all know that. But other
Wait, than, really?
No, of course not.
No. Okay.
Of course not.
I was like, I could not find that fact in my research.
Yes, no, because it's not true.
That.
It's because it's not true. I made it up. But the, you know, I mean, I can sort of see an actor being drawn to a role. You know, they really want to portray it. But this is not the Al Capone. This is not fun Al Capone. That's the thing, is you never get to see. He's fun Al Capone for about 4 seconds in the beginning of the movie. And then he's sick Al Capone the whole rest of the time. So, you know, he's hallucinating. He's got he's peeing himself. You know, it's gross. That's the other thing, is it's genuinely disgusting. Like it's not really enjoyable to watch. So I don't really know. I mean, is it a good performance? I mean, it's a performance. I mean, I don't know that I would call this, like, I don't know that I can call it bad acting per se, but it's not good.
When I compare it to Robert De Niro's performance from The Untouchables, I don't know if I touched upon this last week, but Robert De Niro, there was a cartoony element to The Untouchables. Like, I told you that two of the movies it reminded me of were Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Batman. There was this cartoony element to it, and De Niro kind of hammed it up. You know, I want these people dead. He really, like, hammed up.
I want his family dead. I want his business dead. Yeah.
Right. Right, it was like a cartoony portrayal of Al Capone, but this one actually, he looked like a ghoul. I kept thinking, he looked and talked like a cartoon character.
I don't know what that was. I mean, I put it out on the closed captioning. It says indistinct yelling. That's what it is. And it's sort of like, what is that? Like, how do you write that in the script? I mean, does he just start making – Al Capone just made – guttural noises? I mean, I don't understand what that's supposed to be. Like, that, what message does that convey? I don't get it.
Well, I get my thinking is Tom Hardy is a method actor. His portrayal, he researched who Al Capone was in 1946, 47, at that time period, and learned that Capone, that he clearly had, like, a, you know, the smoker lungs. I guarantee you there was more going on there than just dementia. And they kind of touched upon it. Kyle MacLachlan plays the doctor. Totally uncompelling character.
Nothing character, but the hints at a backstory that might be interesting.
There's a few subplots in this movie I just did not give a shit about.
Because they're completely undeveloped.
No, some are... One is developed. One is dropped and it's justified in the movie, kind of. But the Kyle MacLachlan thing is like, why? It's not like, it, I mean, not even just why. It's like, what was the point? It went nowhere. I don't want to spoil anything, but
you don't.
But he touches upon a little bit of, like, his overall health when Capone has a stroke somewhere in the movie, and Kyle MacLachlan says, replaces cigars with carrots. So we know his health, you know, smoking these cigars has really probably taken a toll on his health. They don't talk about it in his lungs, though. They only talk about it as it pertains to having a stroke.
Well, you're not supposed to smoke. It's bad. I mean, yeah, it's. I don't know that cigarettes cause strokes necessarily, or cigars cause strokes necessarily, but it's just part of overall health. You know, you can't be doing that if you're sick.
Yeah. Also, we're talking about actors in the movie. I want to give a small shout out. Linda Cardellini is, like, so underrated and so underappreciated.
You know what? She's terrific in everything. Her best was on ER, and ER she was phenomenal, and I think she got credit there. But she really is just not – yeah, I don't think people appreciate how good she is. I totally agree with that.
And she always did these roles of, like, the housewife and everything. She was good. She was in Mad Men. She was great in Mad Men. If you ever watched that,
I didn't know she was in Mad Men.
Yeah, she has a small couple episodes affair with Don Draper. John Hamm got around on that show. If you haven't watched it, she's like ageless. She was gorgeous too.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love her. I'm a big fan of hers. I mean, she even shows up in
almost
superhero
no
movie.
Different.
She's Hawkeye's wife.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. She is Hawkeye's wife. But she's ageless. I bet she's like 10 years older than Jeremy Renner. Anyway.
Is she really?
I would imagine. I don't know. Like, Linda Cardellini got her start, let's say, 1999 with Freaks and Geeks. Jeremy Renner didn't hit the map until 2009 with the Hurt Locker.
No, but Jeremy Renner was around before the Hurt Locker. He just hadn't, he just hadn't gotten a big role.
Sure. I mean, I don't know. She's gorgeous. Anyway, she's good. But did I have anything else with the actors? No, I just want to. This is like if this is less. Anyway, this is less about Al Capone, like more. This is like if David Lynch made a mob
movie.
Yeah,
I mean, it was almost. I mean, I've said this about other things that there was maybe like a script written about something else, and it kind of got grafted around Al Capone. Like supposedly that was how Joker was made. I don't know that for a fact, but that's what a few people have said. And I think that's an interesting idea that Joker was just sort of about a guy, and then they said, okay, let's turn this into a movie turn this into a Joker origin story. That being said, I guess this would have to have been about Capone. Maybe there were elements from other scripts. I don't know. It was just weird, man. I don't know what else to say. I mean, there's like weird unnecessary lines, like when Matt Dillon gets the phone call, like he hangs up and then he just sort of looks. He almost looks directly to the camera and says, "I'm going to Florida." Like we didn't need you to say that, man. Like we know you're going to Florida. Where else would you be going? It's not like we've got multiple storylines here. This isn't a Robert Altman movie. I mean, come on.
Right.
You know.
I just want to make like one quick note. When I wrote a little note about that scene where he was like, "I'm going to Florida." He's having sex with a girl and he's doing it doggy style. And I wrote, everyone in movies in the 30s does it doggy style. Why?
Oh, is that right? I don't know.
I mean, like, I thought of this, and I thought of Inglourious Basterds, which I know took place like more in the 40s, but like, I don't know. It's just like a thing to do, girls.
It's a thing.
In the 2000s, you're doing missioning.
It's written, directed, and edited by Josh Trank, and I don't know enough about editing, but I wonder if that's a bad idea. Like Robert Rodriguez does that, and I think in his case, it's a good idea, but. I just wonder if you want another eye on movies when you've got, sort of a less experienced director. I don't know. I don't know anything about editing, but I thought that was an interesting note. You know, this was very much his baby. So anything – this movie sinks or swims, this is 100% on him. Like, it's really not on Tom Hardy as much as it's, Tom Hardy's movie. But also, as you said, as written, it's not really Tom Hardy's movie. That's the weird thing, is this is not a tour de force performance. This was not something where you could say, "Oh, okay, this is a star vehicle." It's really not. It's an atmospheric movie without the atmosphere. The way Untouchables had this incredible set design and this amazing sense of place, mise en scène, if you will, this did not have that.
Yeah.
And I don't really know why that is. Like, I don't know what they could have done differently. Maybe they just needed better designers, or just a tighter production. Style. I have no idea, but it was definitely not really working. It was very the pacing was very slow. And then there was this weird thing, and maybe I just blinked and missed it, but like Matt Dillon suddenly disappears. Do you have any idea what happened to him?
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to defend the movie a little bit. I think I like that it wasn't trying to be Untouchables. Like, it was totally trying to be its own thing. It wasn't like when Gotti was trying so hard to be Martin Scorsese, without a doubt. This was like,
yes,
from the moment
true.
It opened, I was like, this is just trying to, if anything, it's trying to be a David Lynch movie. It's not trying to be a mob movie. And he got rid of it. And I thought the framing of like him having neurosyphilis and going through all this stuff, when it starts happening, like when the movie gets going, I'm like, great. And I love, I never saw what was coming. I never knew what was going to happen next. And I was sitting there like white knuckled. Like after there's a certain middle point, my favorite part is the middle of the, is like in the middle of the movie. And I'm going to touch on it a little bit later, but it's this middle section that is so well done and so Lynchian. And I was having so much fun, and I was like laughing, and I was like screaming, yes, more of that. This is like, it created almost like this new genre of film. I have never seen a mafia psychological horror film. It was like Cronenberg, Lynch, and Martin Scorsese had a deformed baby and came out with this movie. That's what it felt like. There was like horror. I love that there was like horror elements. There was like psychological thriller elements. It was just all this stuff, and that's why.
Yeah, but
I
it does,
like,
but it doesn't make
know.
But it doesn't make sense. Like I just asked you a question, and you completely threw it out. You said you loved it, but you just didn't answer my question. Where did Matt Dillon go?
Oh, so you've been cutting in and out. I guess I didn't hear that. Where did Matt Dillon go? I don't care. I think so. Matt Dillon, I think, was a figment of his imagination, but then that doesn't answer why he answered the phone call.
He can't be wrong. He can't be a figment of his imagination because he answered a call from May. Isn't May the one who calls him?
I don't remember who called him.
Well, who would it have been?
It couldn't have been
Al. Al's you know, Fatutz.
Yeah, but when Matt Dillon gets there, Al's the only one who notices he's there. And then he comes back a little bit later, and it's revealed that this is the, not to spoil it a little bit, this is the guy who Al Capone, I guess, had a little incident with. You know what I'm talking about.
But I could have sworn that somebody else called him. This is what I'm talking about. This drives me crazy in movies. I need it to make sense internally. If it doesn't make sense internally, to me, it has failed. It doesn't have to be super stylized like Untouchables. I'm not saying that it has to be like that. What I'm saying is that I think this movie kind of did want to be stylized like that and did not succeed. Like so we're saying two different things. Like it is not that is the bar that all movies must you know go for. It's just, I don't know. I mean, I think they were trying to do something like that. Not the cartoonish like Untouchables, but in the sense of, you know, creating a place. Any period movie wants to be very set in that period. Like, if it doesn't, then it doesn't know what it's doing.
I will say, I think that is a problem, is it didn't really – it was trying to be its own thing, but I don't think it knew what it wanted to be.
Right. Here's a line I wrote down.
Let's
catch some of his marbles on the way out. What kind of dialogue is that? Let's catch some of his marbles on the way out.
Oh, this is a movie where, like, I don't even pay attention to the script. Like,
well, but
like,
what a ridiculous thing to say. I mean, how would you not pay attention to the script? It's got a script.
I mean, there's a bunch of stupid shit. There's stupid shit in the script all over the place. I don't care about, like, what they're saying. I wanted more Al Capone hallucinations. That's what I was, like, in store. I'm like, more. In fact, every time they started talking, I zoned out. I didn't care. I was like, more hallucinations,
that
please.
Doesn't speak well of the script. It was written and directed by and edited by the same guy. He wrote those words.
No, the script is
I guarantee you, he cares.
Terrible. The script is terrible. I just didn't
care.
Because,
like, all of a sudden, Junior has a wife. Did you catch that towards the end? Like suddenly, he's never had a wife before or a girlfriend or something. It doesn't, I don't know. There's just suddenly a woman sitting next to him, you know? I mean, it's stuff like that where I just go like, what the hell, man? Like who allowed to, I don't know enough about how movies get made. And I understand like saying Fantastic Four, studio interference wrecked it, you know, maybe that's true. I have no idea, but with something like this, it seems like they could have used a little interference because there's things that just don't make any sense.
Well, it's also like, what are the stakes, really, is another problem. Like, there's no, I don't know what the stakes are. Like, what's on the line here? Al Capone's sanity? The beginning title card I have, I want to read the beginning title card. Because we do it on every time there's a beginning title card, we read it. So I'm going to read it on the show. October 17th, 1931, the world's most notorious gangster is sentenced to prison for income tax evasion. While there, his mental and physical health crumbles from neurosyphilis. A decade later, no longer deemed a threat, he's released to live in exile in Florida under government watch. This is the final year of his life. So again, no, set, doesn't set up that it's 1947. It actually sets it up more that it's 1941. Really?
Well, 41 or 31?
Well, it says it's October 17th, 1931. Is when he goes to prison. A decade later, no longer deemed
a decade later.
But again, like, what are the stakes? Like, what are we to care about? That was my first note. I'm like, what am I to care about here? Well, I'm getting a little repetitive, but like, I thought this was going to be a movie about the final year of Al Capone's life. Actually, one of the reasons I wanted to see it is because I heard it was so bonkers. Everyone said this movie's nuts.
I don't think it's that nuts. I didn't think it was that nuts. I thought it was nutty, but I didn't think it was. I didn't think it was nuts. You know what movie's nuts? Natural Born Killers. That movie is nuts. Like that is a crazy movie with crazy stuff happening, and it's great, and I love it. It's so creative and like energetic and alive and interesting. This is like the pacing is glacial.
I wouldn't say it's glacial pacing. It knows where. It's hard to say like it knows what it's doing, but there's this middle scene that I was absolutely enthralled with, and it comes when Matt Dillon comes to visit, and then they're watching The Wizard of Oz, and then he goes I thought it was really cool that like he had neurosyphilis and contrasting that with he thinks he's being watched by the FBI, which he really is. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. Like, the contrast, like, what he's thinking and what he's seeing. He has dementia. And are people going to believe him? Or are they going to say he's paranoid? They don't really answer if he's like, really being paranoid or not, which I think is great. That's a question that doesn't need to be answered. But he goes to the bathroom. So he's watching The Wizard of Oz with Matt Dillon and his wife. And he goes to the bathroom. And he opens the shower curtain. And he's got his lighter in his hand. And he's about to light a cigar, and there's a guy in the shower, and they're like inches away from each other, looking at each other. And Al Capone just looks at him and just puffs on his cigar. And then he's called back out, and he's just looking at this guy. And the guy looks horrified, like, oh my God, I'm going to die. And then he closes the curtain and walks out. And I was like, brilliant. And then Al Capone, like, goes down to the hallway, and he goes down into the basement, and he opens the door, and there's like this party going on, and like who, like Nat King Cole or
Louis Armstrong? Jesus Christ, Louis Armstrong.
Okay, it's Louis Armstrong singing "Blueberry Hill."
Blueberry Hill,
Hill,
which was made famous by Fats Domino. So but it was not made famous by Nat King Cole.
I don't know. It probably,
racist.
You know what? It's an old song. It might have been sang by Nat King Cole. I wouldn't be. All those movies, all those songs are being passed around like whores. You know what? It also kind of reminds me of. I was reminded of. They kept calling him Fonzie. In the movie, and I kept thinking, "Hey!" But there's a part in Happy Days where. Or one of the running jokes in, like, the early days of Happy Days is Ron Howard keeps singing Blueberry Hill every time, like, something good happens to him with a girl.
Right. I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
And then, it's that whole sequence. Then he's pulled into the other room, and the guy gets stabbed in the neck, and he sees himself in the mirror, and he's younger, and then he goes down to the street and he's chasing the boy, I think, or everyone. There was like this raid.
I thought the boy was young him, but I think the boy was actually young Tony.
I wanted more of that boy with the bullet. I wanted more of the boys like walking slowly with the balloon. I love movies like that where it's like, what the fuck is going on?
See, if this were genuinely like just a weird movie, I guess I could go with that. But I don't think it really is that. I think it wants to be two things. Like, it wants to be sort of weird and arty, but it also wants to be about Al Capone. And I don't know that you can really do both. I mean, or if you can, this did not succeed.
I think you can. I think this movie got if there is that goal, I think it got close to finish line. Like, I think it had that in mind and like didn't know how to accomplish it, but I think it's absolutely possible. And I think this movie is maybe like a good blueprint for like, yeah, it can be done. We just didn't really do it properly because for some reason we had these other agendas. The end made me laugh so hard. I don't remember what happened. Like,
what happened to the end?
So Al Capone is, I guess, like imagining himself with his gold Tommy gun walking around killing all the, like, pretty much all the people in his house. He's walking around like this poopy diaper in his robe. He's like just shooting people.
Is that supposed to be fake? Are you saying that was fake?
It was in his head, yeah. Because Tony was,
I guess at that
end,
point
Tony
I had checked
alive.
Out.
Everybody shot was alive. And the only person he shot was the gardener. He shot in the leg. He didn't kill anybody.
So he did shoot one of them.
He shot one of them, but I guess he shot one of them and then he passed out. They found him on the floor with the gun, and then they found the other guy having been shot in the leg. But with that middle, section, is like you got your foot on the gas, keep going, and they take their foot off the gas, and it makes that ending, which should be, I think the ending should be more fun than it even was. It makes it, I didn't care as much. I wanted more like hallucinations. I wanted more of like that middle scene. I wanted like that tension of like seeing the guy in the bathroom. I'm like, this is so good. I was having so much fun.
It was very hard to care about this stuff. I mean, I didn't care about the kid from Cleveland. Like, and the thing is, like, I am super susceptible to estranged fathers. You know, my dad died when I was really young, and so I am very susceptible to, I don't know my father, I'm founding my father, and all that kind of stuff. That usually gets me right where I live, and boy, did this not do that, because it was like, what? Like, I don't even know who this is. I don't know who these people are. I don't really care. I mean, I found it very hard to care about Al Capone. Or, sorry, we don't call him Al. We call him Fonzo, which was the original name of the movie. I don't know if you – Fonzo or whatever.
Oh, that's right. It was Fonzo. Yeah, yeah.
It was Fonzo, because that's a good idea. You know, like, that's a real – because that's a name people can pick up on. Much better that than Capone. Just by naming it Capone, you're going to get a certain amount of on-demand stuff. Like, when I search Capone in Amazon Prime Video, there's like 7 or 8 movies called Capone. So at least, if nothing else, you'll get people who are just sort of looking for stuff like that. Like, there's one with Martin Sheen, for God's sake. There's a lot of them that are out there. We could probably do, you know, 5 weeks on movies named Capone.
You want to do that?
Not really.
Maybe 5 weeks. We could use Scarface.
I'm telling you, you don't get to pick the movies anymore. I am now in charge. I am the captain now.
There's a bunch of subplots in here. We mentioned it before, but there are a bunch of subplots here that, like, didn't. Some of the subplots involve so Al Capone stuffed away $10 million, as is known now, and I think made more famous by the fact that Geraldo Rivera thought he found the vault with $10 million.
Right. Oh, my God. I watched that live because I'm so much older than you. I watched that when it happened.
Oh, my God. I want to ask you about that, but – I don't know.
Such a nothing. It was so funny. Live TV, man. Nothing like live TV.
Yeah. But yeah, that was so there's still $10 million out there that nobody knows where it is. You know.
At this point, the worm's got it. I mean, you know, if he really buried it, then, you know, presumably it's done.
I mean, what do we know about the life of money underground? I don't know. But it doesn't stop the fact that there is $10 million. To all my listeners, there's $10 million of Al Capone's money out there somewhere, and nobody knows where in the hell it is.
Dig it up.
Not even Geraldo Rivera. Kind of ruined his career, didn't it?
It was not a – I mean, it didn't ruin his career. He still has a career such as it is. I think he's on Fox News now. But, you know, it didn't kill his career. It was hurting. It definitely hurt it. He did other stuff. He did. I mean, it was definitely a blow, he did other things.
He was a really respected reporter before then.
It was ridiculous. It was utterly ridiculous. But there's a fascination with him. And, you know, there's a reason why this movie got made. I mean, it's not because people don't care about Al Capone. People are still, you know, totally fascinated by it.
Al Capone is part of American culture. Like, he's Americana at this point. It's almost like hard to talk about the rise of America without talking about Al Capone. You can't talk about Prohibition without talking about Al Capone.
No, of course not. So let's talk about the other subplot, which is there was clearly a story of this guy, this FBI agent who, you know, clearly he's got a mad on for Capone, the one who has the line that they put in the trailer, you know, what's the difference between Hitler and Al Capone? You know, Hitler's dead. And
that was such a trailer line.
It's a total trailer line.
That was a line.
Yeah.
Like, I need something for the trailer.
Yeah, like we need something for the trailer. But you know what's not in the trailer, interestingly enough? Tom Hardy speaking as Al Capone. There is not a single shot of him speaking as Al Capone, which is fascinating.
But then the movie says it's based on true – or the trailer says it's based on true events. And I was like, no, it's not.
Sense that Al Capone was a real person. And he lived out his days in Florida, presumably. I mean, I don't know. I didn't look. But, you know, that's all you need for based on real events. I'm sure the FBI was trying to listen to him, and they wanted to get the money back. I'm sure that's all true. I mean, there's no reason to think that's not true.
Yeah.
But this guy has got this mad on for Capone, and they never explain it. It never really comes to and it never resolves. He sort of comes in to interview him there at the end, and it amounts to nothing.
Do you think Josh Trank and Neil Brennan were friends? Because there's no reason for Neil Brennan to be in this movie except for that one.
Who is
that
Neil
one
Brennan?
Scene.
Who
Neil Brennan
Brennan
was a co-writer for Chappelle's Show.
Okay, but who is he
in
the movie?
Who's Neil Brennan in the movie, or who's Neil Brennan in real life?
Who is he in the movie?
He was the lawyer. The guy.
That wouldn't surprise me. Does he usually do a lot of acting?
No, I mean, he's written and directed shit before. He co-wrote Half-Way.
Then they're definitely friends. I take back everything I said about Josh Trank. He's a genius.
Well, Josh Trank has some good movies too. Resume. He had Chronicle and what was the movie? His first movie was a really good movie too.
No, Chronicle was his first movie. Chronicle was a terrific movie. I love Chronicle.
There's another movie he did that was supposed to be really good. He's like 2 for 4 in terms of like having high tomato meter scores. The other plot that goes nowhere is Kyle MacLachlan's infiltrating Capone for the FBI. That goes nowhere.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, the whole thing, this idea that they're going to get him to reveal where the money is, like, is an interesting idea. And I would even like that maybe there's a futility. I like futility. Like, a futility in a story can be I like theater of the absurd, like, you know, the Waiting for Godot kind of thing. Like maybe this is a Waiting for Godot sort of thing where they're going to keep trying to get the money, but they just can't get it. And, you know, like, okay, that's fine, but that's not what ends up happening.
No, and then the other subplot that I didn't care about was, I think you talked about already, was his other son in Cleveland. And he finally meets him at the end, and it's just like, oh, I guess that's what we were building up to.
Right, like, ooh, that was big.
Yeah, I didn't care. Yeah, you're right. There was a lot of...
No,
I
couldn't get worked up about it.
I think my overall consensus is that there's a lot I didn't care about, but the things I cared about deeply. And to the point where I was like, I like this. I really like this movie.
Wow. There's a character in it. I watched the credits because I felt like I had to watch the whole thing beginning to end. There's a character in it named Mona Lisa. I don't remember who that is, but that is a credited character. And the special thanks are really interesting. Amy Heckerling. You know who Amy Heckerling is?
Yes, I do. She wrote Clueless.
Yeah, Clueless.
The Ridgemont High.
Right. So not only Amy Heckerling, but also Doris Heckerling and Molly Heckerling. I don't know who they are. Not only that, they're not only thanked, but Jordan Peele and Patton Oswalt are thanked.
What the fuck?
So, I mean, maybe we should delete this episode and not have anyone hear it, because this is like big time show business and we just aren't aware of it.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, Brett. I love this movie.
I think maybe I'm the one who's gonna get canceled.
That's so weird. I just want to say that there is, like, with movies like this where it is like Lynch, where people like want to be Lynch. I've seen you've probably seen like poor Lynch imitator movies too, and this is clearly a poor Lynch imitator.
No, I never thought of it that way, but that actually sheds a very different light on it, and I can appreciate it better with thinking of it that way. I tend to think of everything very literally. So, you know, if something is a little more weird like this, I'm usually not the target audience. Like I enjoyed Twin Peaks, but like Mulholland Drive made no sense to me. I didn't understand what happened. It was all style. Like I just, what was going on? Like, it's just, this is imaginary. This is not imaginary. I don't get it.
Well, the thing about Mulholland Drive, was there's like a point. Lynch has a point. He has a method to his madness. And I think that's what a lot of people don't get. And Josh Trank clearly didn't have a method to this madness.
Right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So it's kind
so
of
you
like,
agree with me.
Yeah.
So you agree with
me. Oh, yeah. I've agreed with you on several points. The script is not good. It's a poorly made movie. There's a lot of the subplots I don't care about. Tom Hardy, I'm still split on. I'm like, is it good acting? Is it bad acting? Sometimes I just didn't give a shit. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna enjoy this ride, and he can do what he wants. And this is like, but it was really, I haven't seen a mob movie like that. And by that logic, I was glad I saw this. I might see it again.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, I don't want to see it again.
Think,
there's too much else to see. Too many other good things. I sort of want to watch it again now that you've said all this, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I just want to watch that middle section again. Honestly, like, I would watch the middle section in the end again, because the end is like just, he's clearly, there should be more thrown at us.
I'm willing to agree with you on that one, that if it had been more like that, then that would have given it more of a point. Then it's like the movie's just batshit, and then you can sort of appreciate it for being batshit and really crazy and, you know, going all out. You know, like, that's cool. Okay, fine.
That's fair enough.
That's
what I think. Like, it had its foot on that gas pedal, and then it just kind of took it off. Like, it was going down that route, and then it was like, oh, wait, we gotta do this Al Capone shit. Oh, the FBI shit. And I was like, I don't care about that. I just want, like, I think that's just so cool. Like, all this stuff weighing down on him, and, like, he's going through dementia. And, like, I had a family member die of dementia. They died of Alzheimer's. So I guess, like, I was a little bit more tied to that plotline than you were.
I get very upset by stories like that, because that is one of my greatest fears, is the idea that I would have a stroke and then wind up, you know, I don't want it. I've seen it happen to people, you know, family members, and I just think it's so unpleasant. It's really, it's very hard. So I actually, maybe I'm being a little unfair, because that is very hard for me to watch.
Getting old scary shit, man. I'm not looking forward to it.
100%.
Sometimes I do it. I'm 28, and sometimes I'm like, shit, man, I'm old.
Yeah. Okay. Count on it.
I want to say one more thing, because we do have about a minute left. I don't want to rank this. I know we always try to, like, the movies we talk about, like, where we rank them in terms of, like, the mob movies. I'm not going to rank this one in terms of that, because it was the least mafia mob movie that we've watched. And it's almost had, like, nothing to do with the mafia. Except for Al Capone. And I hate that it'll be put in that canon.
You hate that it'll be put in what canon?
The mob movie canon. Because it's Al Capone.
Yeah, but you're right. It's really, it's only nominally a mob movie. I mean, it's fine for the purposes of this, but in terms of, you know, fitting in with, you know, a Goodfellas or something like that, or, you know, some of the other movies, I don't know. It's just not that kind of movie.
Yeah, I guess, so we have 20 seconds left. My final statement is, if this becomes a midnight movie, I won't be surprised. I hope it is. I really hope it is. I think it'd be a really good midnight movie.
Okay,
anyway,
fair enough.
Yeah, that was Capone. I'm Ruben Wolf.
I'm Brett Singer.
This has been comedians talking about Bob movies. Bye.